Welcome back to The New Talk, the Bob Davis Podcasts. In podcast 376, I want to talk about the new revised numbers for the first quarter economic growth or no growth in the United States. You heard it here first. Also, Senator Bernie Sanders, the socialist, spoke in Minneapolis over the weekend, and the Star Tribune predictably gushes. Carly Farina spoke in Delaware, and she says big business and big government are crushing the potential of Americans. And as if on cue, the LA Times has conducted an expose of Elon Musk, who continues his role as the poster child of subsidies, in podcast 376. Now, in this podcast, I am going to talk about the Mobile Podcast Command Center because I have so many different names for basically an ambulance that I have turned into a mobile studio. Mobile Podcast Command Unit 8. It has so many names, I can't keep track of them. Where did it come from? I got it from xgovernmentcars.com. My friend Ed hooked me up. And I just want to tell you very quickly about xgovernmentcars.com's grand reopening event, which is continuing. xgovernmentcars.com has nicer, newer vehicles. Now, my ambulance experience is part of the reason why I say this, because when I was looking to get some kind of a mobile studio, I wanted to get a panel van. And first, my son said, don't get a panel van because it's a creeper thing. You don't want a creeper van. And Ed said, don't get a panel van because it's going to cost you a lot more money. Plus, you're still going to have to finish off the inside. Let me find an ambulance. And we got an ambulance, and it's just been fantastic. And the whole point here is he knew where to look to find that vehicle and got me a great ambulance for the Mobile Podcast Command Center. Now, that applies to the rest of the business as well. xgovernmentcars.com has nicer, newer vehicles because Ed knows where to go to find them. So we're talking about, one owner, professionally maintained government and fleet vehicles, Chargers, Impalas, next-gen Fords, which includes the Ford Police Sedan, which I just saw in a movie last night, plus trucks, vans, and SUVs. I saw an Expedition there that he had a couple of weeks ago from the FBI. It was super clean. And here's the other thing. Great financing for all levels of credit, the good, the bad, and the ugly. So if you are in business and you need a panel van, you can get financed because everybody's approved. Again, X Government Cars only carries one owner, professionally maintained government and fleet vehicles. Only xgovernmentcars.com has it all. And let's review. Cash deals direct from owner Ed Johnson, a 3-day satisfaction guarantee, financing for all levels of credit, and you can apply online safely and securely 24/7 at xgovernmentcars.com. Or if you feel like hanging out, you can visit those guys at X Government Cars. They're great. They're at 2420 Nevada Avenue North in Golden Valley, Minnesota. And don't forget, the grand reopening event continues now at xgovernmentcars.com. Well, I'm in a mood. This is one of those podcasts I've started and stopped a couple of times. And whenever that happens, you know, I know that there's something down in there that's just pressing to get out. And I'm not quite sure what it is. I can tell you that it's increasingly, you know, I do this every day. And I this is becoming a theme. And I almost hate to restate the theme. But you know what I do every day. I do a lot of news reading every day. I usually take Saturday off and don't look at anything. And today, of course, is Sunday in podcast time, Sunday night, Monday morning. And I started the day out by, you know, doing what I usually do, which is look at a lot of different news sources, print up a bunch of stories, and then later on, while I'm making dinner and after dinner, read them. And then try to put some kind of a podcast together that gives you some dots to connect that other people aren't necessarily going to give you, because most of what is put out in the media, it just doesn't tell the full story. That doesn't mean that it's conspiracy theories or that actually that there's aliens that are running things from a mountain in Colorado or anything else. It's just, I'm hearing a lot about personalities, and I'm hearing a lot of what political candidates say just reprinted and restated without any real effort placed on what it is to discuss or to reveal or to analyze what it is that they're actually saying, whether or not they actually believe what they're saying. And on top of all that, You know, I just think all this political coverage is really negative. I don't think it's good because we're not getting a break in this country. And I mean, people are taking a break. And I had some great conversations with friends over the weekend. And I'm going to be talking more about this because I'm going to get back out on the road probably in the next 24 to 48 hours. We're heading back out in the podcast mobile command unit. And just very quickly, I want to say that this is why we have the big yellow donate button on the page at thebobdavispodcast.com, because the mobile podcast command unit is crowdfunded. So that means if you want to give me a little bit of extra cash for diesel fuel, I'd appreciate that. I'm heading east, so I'm going to go to Newport News. I'm going to Richmond for the general manager of the Bob Davis Podcast's birthday. And then I'm heading probably up to Washington, going to run through Chicago and some other places, and then come back through the great industrial core, the Rust Belt, as they used to call it, Ohio and Indiana and Illinois and perhaps Michigan, in this sort of short East Coast tour for the beginning of this year. And we'll be going other places this summer. So, and I think those podcasts are better because I think some of what I'm thinking gets clarified on those podcasts. But I guess I'm going to start with the economy and coverage of the economy. First of all, I did a podcast a while back about the economy. I've done a few, and I don't like to do them a lot because people struggle with those, just like they struggle with the foreign policy podcast. But you have to do them so that it sort of lays down a baseline for people to hear and understand, so that when they hear future numbers and things, they'll have some perspective. And you're going to hear a lot this morning about economic numbers. And we're going to be told, we've been told, because of the employment numbers, the economy is fine, don't worry about it. But in fact, they have now revised first quarter growth to first quarter contraction. So the first quarter, which the numbers have already been out, and just so people know, the government revises the GDP numbers three or four times. Usually, I think they go through four revisions because of new information. You know, they're basically models. They're not necessarily direct numbers. And as more information comes in, they revise the numbers. And each time they revise the numbers, they make headlines. Sometimes they make headlines going up. Sometimes they make headlines going down. That's why it's really important that commentators be careful of what they say when GDP numbers first come out, because usually they are revised. Well, in fact, the GDP numbers from the first quarter were revised from, I think, a 0.1% growth figure to a 0.7% contraction, which is almost a full point. That means that in order to recover, you know, any kind of growth, moderate growth, the economy is going to have to grow 3 or 4% the rest of the year, and I doubt very seriously if that's going to happen. Now, the Pollyannas are out there saying, oh, things are great because employment numbers are up, and don't worry about it. It's okay. Everything's fine. Well, we already knew the first quarter wasn't good, and now it's been revised down. I mentioned that it was a contraction almost a full point, and what you need to do is get ready for the usual excuses and the usual caveats and the usual explanations of why you shouldn't worry about or complain about or criticize the current administration's economic performance. It was the dollar. It was the West Coast port labor strife that went on. Don't worry. The second quarter is already looking good, except it's not. And as I told you, the Pollyannas keep quoting labor numbers. They keep saying, but the labor numbers look really good. And they keep predicting that people are going to run out and spend the quote-unquote tax cut that they got when the price of fuel dropped. First of all, the unemployment numbers still don't include millions of people who are out of the workforce for whatever reason. So they have the people that are out of the workforce aren't being figured into the labor numbers. And this is almost an old, you know, people keep saying this. And after a while, when you repeat this over and over again, people don't pay any attention to it. The second thing is the jobs being created. And you've seen a little of this coverage in Minnesota. You may have seen it in your state if you don't live in Minnesota. You know, there was a big belief that we were going to create these highly powerful, really great jobs. But in fact, the jobs that are being created are usually fairly low skilled and to a certain extent, part-time jobs. So I don't think the labor numbers show a robust economic growth period. I think they show that we're keeping pace, and I'll tell you why in a second. They also, when they talk about people, quote unquote, spending the tax cut they got when the price of fuel dropped, usually neglect to mention that the drop in the price of fuel negatively impacted the energy industry, which is a huge part of manufacturing, subsidized in part by a weaker dollar, which made oil even cheaper abroad. I told you that 6 months ago when this whole thing started. I said, don't listen to these people. First of all, the gas didn't go down enough for people to feel like they had a windfall. Secondly, you know, there's another shoe that's going to drop, which is manufacturing, which is a large degree. It's the energy. You know, energy is a big piece of the manufacturing sector, and they're shutting down wells, which means they're not buying parts. They're not getting things manufactured, and that's going to slow things down. The other thing is these guys always talk about the consumer as 3/4 of the U.S. GDP. It is not, and here's why. One of the things the government does when they talk about a consumer, you know, the consumer numbers, all sorts of things are included in the consumer numbers because they figure that these things are spent or counted as consumption. So they include all sorts of transfer payments. They include Social Security payments. They include Medicare, Medicaid payments. We're not talking about people going out and buying clothes and cars and things like that. So really, the consumer is maybe 40 to 45% of the U.S. market. The reason I don't like all this talk about the consumer is it perpetuates this myth that if we simply stimulate the consumer, the economy will catch and the engine will start to run, except that's not the way it works. Basically, all of these things are caveats and excuses. I don't think the economy is in that better shape. It certainly hasn't been contracting, although it's contracting now, according to the latest numbers. But I think what's happened is people have adapted to slow or no growth. They're hiring part-timers. They're adapting to the policies that this administration and the Democrat Congress, primarily when it was a majority, has enacted. What we need in this country is much faster growth for a long time. Larry Kudlow wrote a piece recently, I think it was this weekend, where he talked about we need 5% growth. We need a 5% growth target in this country, and all we need to do is extensive tax cuts to get it. I don't think so. I think we're in a different time. I'm certainly in favor of tax cuts, but what we really need to do is we need to cut the involvement and size and power of the federal governments first and then the state governments significantly. And if we do that, it's going to have an impact because government spending is a big part of the GDP. And as far as actually doing that, I think it's an impossible political hurdle. And I think this is one of the things that's upsetting me tonight in terms of where I'm at. While I'm optimistic about America, I'm pessimistic about the political situation in this country, especially after the conversations I had with friends over the weekend. And for proof, I give you none other than Senator Bernie Sanders, the avowed socialist Democrat from Vermont, came to Minneapolis this weekend to a standing room-only crowd at the American Indian Center over on Franklin in Minneapolis. I don't think it's that big, but it's also located right in that little area where all of the old hippies live. And I love one of the quotes from the Tribune story. You have to read several paragraphs down, which is its gushing coverage of Sanders' visit. Quote, many in the crowd appeared to be veterans of battles over the Vietnam War and women's rights. Now, if it had been a Republican crowd, they would have said most of them were senior citizens. But because it's a liberal crowd, they had to qualify the fact that most of these people are in their 60s and 70s, which is usually what you get when you get people like Bernie Sanders in Minneapolis. There's a lot of really old lefties that live in Minneapolis, and they really come out for this stuff. In other words, basically, as I said, old people. Now, Sanders sold the usual chicken in every pot fair, free college, free medical care, a hard line on free trade, increasing the minimum wage, higher taxes on the rich, and yet even more socialized medicine. Now, none of this is going to work, but it sure sounds good. And that's why I think that in terms of a political hurdle, it's pretty high because people really hew to this these days. And of course, on top of all that, and tied up in a nice little bow around this package is the inequality speech. We're going to do these things, free college, free medical care, a hard line on free trade, increasing the minimum wage, etc., and it's going to equalize the U.S. economy. And the reason that we're having these problems is that we're moving towards an oligarchy in the United States, which, by the way, is true. But it's not true because of the reasons that he says. It's true because of the kinds of policies that he's advocating. Because socialism pretend socialism or socialism light eventually always leads to this kind of a situation. Because when the government is taking all the resources and redistributing them, the people closest to the redistribution, the power, gain the most. So we're talking about the bureaucrats, the elite educated people who are the lawyers and the doctors who are part of these programs, the congressmen, the senators, and all the people around them. And then, of course, the companies that pay in through contributions and everything else that get the subsidies that creates the conditions for fascism, which is basically the control of resources, not the ownership of resources. And the things that contribute to that are poor economic performance for a long period of time, power and subsidies concentrated in the hands of government functionaries and rich families, as well as rich bureaucrats, and this only slows the economy down further. And when you go out and you advocate even more of this, it sounds good and people buy it, but it still won't work. And eventually what happens is the man on the white horse comes along and consolidates all of that power to make things work for a while, and then comes the tyranny of fascism. That's what happens and what has happened every time fascism has reared its ugly head. And usually people will give you German fascism as an example, but I give you Italian fascism as an example because, in fact, Mussolini was a socialist. So I think that's very interesting and very important to point out. Sanders says what we have now isn't democracy. And again, this is a statement of fact because the United States is a representative republic, which is a little different from the democracy that he's talking about. And I think one of the big problems in America is that we keep trying to cobble a real democracy onto the superstructure of a representative republic, which is a little bit different type of government. If we had a true democracy in the United States, we would already be in the throes of dictatorship because people would simply vote to open the grain stores. You know, that's what they'll do. But the other thing I want to talk about is how in many ways other candidates are singing the same tune. Republicans are talking about inequality and what we're going to do about it. And in the middle of all this, I have to mention this because the whole underpinning of the inequality position is the paper by Thomas Piketty and the book by Thomas Piketty. The fact is that in his calculations, he may have estimated generational wealth gain, which is the basis of his inequality argument, incorrectly by being too optimistic. And so economists are now reconsidering the entire theory. But that has never stopped politicians from making hay while the sun shines. And again, to prove that, I'll give you the candidate for the Republican presidential nomination, Carly Farina. Close to it this weekend in Delaware, saying big government and big business is crushing the potential of Americans. And it's, again, a statement of fact. So she's kind of saying the same thing that Bernie Sanders is saying. So what's the difference between a socialist and a Republican, right? It's really what she should be saying, and I guess she is, and I don't want to misquote Farina. This is exactly the result of the collectivist policies pursued by the Obama administration and the Democrats early on when he had a majority in the House. The fact is that the things that the president has advocated and the things that this Congress and the Congress before it and others have voted for to fix America's economy haven't worked. And the real question is going to be in 2016 whether or not the American people are going to buy this hokum that is being presented, that it's inequality and what we need to do is equalize things and everything will be fine, which means more government power to pass more laws, to tax more, and to make sure that things are equalized and quote unquote just. And if you believe that, then there's nothing I can do for you because they're going to have the exact opposite effect. And to prove that, I will introduce the biggest oligarch in the American business experience, except for Warren Buffett, Elon Musk. Everybody in this country loves Elon Musk. He's the guy who makes, quote unquote, makes the Tesla and owns a rocket company that's going to go to Mars someday. And of course, was an early investor. It was an early part of PayPal, which I, of course, used to take donations for the Bob Davis podcast remote unit. But they pushed him out of the company and he owned an 11% stake in PayPal. And when they sold the company, he made a lot of money. And then he invested, quote unquote, invested it in these other companies. Except the LA Times has nailed Musk, and I'm very happy that somebody finally did. The LA Times big expose this weekend that says that Musk's companies have received, and this is a staggering number, more than $4.5 billion in subsidies from federal and state governments. In fact, they think it may even be more than that because nobody's added up all of the different subsidies that these different companies get. Now, here's the thing. Musk owns stock in SpaceX, Tesla, and SolarCity, all of which have profit pictures which are inflated by subsidies, which make them popular on Wall Street. So Mr. Smarty Pants, entrepreneur, is actually lining his pockets with your tax dollars because he can sell stock options and everything else to provide income and capital for any future ventures. So we're providing the money for this brilliant man to do all these amazing things. And I, you know, even people who buy the Tesla are getting a subsidy. So you have a $98,000 car that has a subsidy from the government for buying. So, you know, you have people that are making all this money buying a $320,000 car and getting a subsidy to buy it. So next time you're driving your 1996 Saturn down the street and it's burning oil and you see a Tesla sweep by with the hipster in it who's so thrilled that he's driving an electric car and goes around telling everyone how great it is to have an electric car and how he's doing so many wonderful things for the environment. Just remember that you paid for that man to go around and feel superior to everyone else who's driving the oil-burning Saturn. It makes me sick. And that's exactly what we're talking about. And the only way to say, in other words, this is the government getting involved and picking winners and losers. And this is big companies using their government contacts to fence off competition so that other people can't do what they're doing. And so then we get back into this Carly Farina thing where she's saying that people in this country are being throttled. And it's almost a populist statement. It's true. The question is whether she's going to advocate the kind of policies that are going to fix that. And the kind of policies that are going to fix that require the rollback of an awful lot of government spending, cutting off and destroying by law a lot of government programs that don't do anything. And it's going to be a long and involved process and a generational battle to get it done. And I just don't know if any of these candidates really understand the depth of what's going to be required and what's going to happen when government spending is taken out of the picture in terms of GDP and we see contractions in the economy. I don't know if they're going to be able to weather what actually happens when we cut out government spending, because there's a whole period of time when, you know, there's a delay between the effect and the action. So I don't want to go on and on, but it's really frustrating to me. You know, I had two or three different conversations this weekend with people who are just fed up with politics. They're fed up with all of these candidates. They're fed up with, you know, here in Minnesota, the state politics where they go out and they talk to all these groups and they pay lip service to all these groups and then they turn around and they raise spending for education and try to tell you that they're conservative. And, you know, the only thing that I would ask people is, are you going to buy this pig in a poke again? Or are we going to be forced to vote for a pig in a poke because that's all we're going to have is we're going to have the Democrats on one side and big government Republicans on the other side who are just going to tell you that they're going to be better at running the government than the big government Democrats. And so this is the condition that we're in this country in terms of politics. I was thinking this weekend about this, and now I'm just kind of talking off the top of my head, but I really am not sure that the Republican Party, I know, I'm absolutely positive that the Democrats don't see things this way, but I'm not sure that the Republican Party really understands classic economics and really understands supply side economics in terms of what is needed to fix the U.S. economy. And if we don't fix the U.S. economy, we can't fix U.S. foreign policy, and we can't fix U.S. domestic policy. And if we keep doing the same stuff that we've been doing for the last 8 years, literally, and really before that, because you know, George W. Bush did things that really weren't supply side. I mean, he sold everybody the idea that he was this conservative, but then, you know, he was responsible for the bailouts, and he was responsible for panicking when the financial crisis occurred, and he was responsible for the first stimulus, the Keynesian stimulus during the end of his administration. He spent $150 billion to quote-unquote stimulate the economy because he panicked. And when someone like that panics because they don't really understand the underpinnings of the things that really make the economy grow, you know, it really makes me wonder whether there are candidates that really fully understand that. One of the problems with politics right now is, at least on the Republican side, in my opinion, or maybe I should say with the exception of Hillary Clinton, who has literally declared that she's running for president and essentially is considered a standard bearer right now for the Democratic Party, I think a lot of these Republican candidates are running for vice president. They're not running for president. They're not strong enough to run for president. And I've talked about this. One of the problems with all of this coverage right now is guess whose picture is on Drudge, and guess whose picture is on Fox News, and guess whose picture is on CNN, and guess whose picture is in the Tribune, and guess whose picture is everywhere? Hillary Clinton's picture and Hillary Clinton's statements and Hillary Clinton's scandals. But there are no pictures of one or two Republicans. And if there were, it would probably be George Bush, or I mean Jeb Bush, or is it George Bush? I don't know. I'm not sure. So it's not a good situation, and it's tough for me right now because I am gone. The days of advocating for a person or somebody's position are over. I don't do that. I think it's silly for commentators to advocate for a specific position. We as voters have to take all this stuff in, and we have to figure out who we believe in and who we're going to vote for and who we're going to work for. And having people tell us what to do or having people do our work for us is one of the chief problems that we have politically in this country. Everyone's just too lazy to do the work, and they want someone else to tell them what to do, and they will. They will oblige you. They will tell you what to do, and the policies that come out of it generally are terrible. And I'm going to close with really a great example of this kind of terrible policy. First of all, I know last week another court struck down, federal court struck down President Obama's recent ruling, which allows thousands of quote-unquote children to stay in the United States after coming to this country illegally. When he did this amnesty by executive order, even more of these people came. And even so, with it being in trouble in the courts, that hasn't stopped the flow of these people into the United States. The Minneapolis Tribune had a big gushing story this weekend about a nice young man who migrated. That's the word. Here to Minneapolis from Central America, and how great it is that the local schools are quote-unquote accommodating him. It's a story of a Minneapolis public school staffer who is in the school, who provides a more delicious and nutritious lunch for the young man who is the quote-unquote migrant at Wellstone High School than is probably served in the cafeteria there, and helps the young man catch up on his studies, vaccinations, getting him a library card, and we learn that Wellstone specializes in serving young, quote-unquote, immigrants. Then we learn that as many as 50 unaccompanied minors, that's another term for them, have enrolled in school out in Worthington, Minnesota's school district, and how local communities in the state of Minnesota are obligated to serve them, because once they're here, they have to take care of them. Now, I'm sure that the man in the young man, I should say, because he's still a minor in the picture here, is basically the cream of the crop from Central America, because he managed to get here and he had to go through hell to get here. And I'm not trying to discount that. He worked hard at odd jobs in Mexico, then he made the crossing. And this is not to take away from his character, but it provokes the question of what we are doing. We're providing things like free daycare for refugees, and I put quotes on that, from all over the world, because these people come here through refugee programs. They're supposed to bring close family members, and they end up bringing the whole village. We are spending precious resources to do everything in our power to help these people who basically are here illegally. They've broken federal law to come here. We have a president who refuses to enforce the law. And while Americans have a great reservoir of goodwill, and it's a good thing that we have a reservoir of goodwill in this country, you have to ask, what does a kid who's born here with parents who are born here actually get? In other words, in the public school system, what is a kid who's a citizen of the United States with parents who are citizens of the United States? How much special help and care does he or she get to get through the school year or to get a better shot at life? This is the kind of country that this country is becoming through these policies that I'm not sure, you know, I look at this stuff and I think, what is the plan? If I was a conspiracy theorist, I'd say, well, he's doing it on purpose. But this is their vision of the country. I think he is doing it on purpose in the sense that the president's vision and a lot of Democrat visions of the country is a place where everyone can come. And the whole idea that if one person goes hungry in America, it's a failure of, and these are things that are an anathema to the basic ideas of this republic. And it will not end well if we continue to do things. And I just, you know, I'm not seeing the kind of resolve that it's going to take by congressional candidates, by senatorial candidates, you know, and in the last election, certainly by some of these people that were elected, we're seeing already that they're being influenced by people with a lot of money and power. And the average person, the people who really want liberty, don't seem to have the political power to have enough impact to have their views felt. And we continue to go down this road. And I am again asking the question, what is the difference between a Republican and a Democrat? What is the difference in policy? There's a lot of rhetoric from all of these candidates, and we're really going to have to start thinking about which of these is going to become president, and then what kind of Congress are they going to have, and are they going to be able to really change things? Because we're going to have to make some very significant changes, and it's going to take somebody and a group of people with a tremendous amount of resolve to get through this politically, because it is taking this all back, the things that have been given that shouldn't have been given, the things that are being done that the government should not be doing. Turning that around is going to be a significant difficulty. I mean, the good news, the thing that I'm optimistic about is, and I was talking about this today in a conversation, people are adapting. And I think people more and more and more, if they have the resources to do it, are just going to say, I'm going to do this anyway, and I don't care what the government says. You know, I don't care what the law is. I don't care what they're going to essentially obviate government. I call it workarounds. A good example is Uber. Another one is Airbnb, where in a lot of places, you know, there are rules and laws against renting out your place to Airbnb or doing Uber or whatever. And people are just saying, I don't care. I'm going to do it anyway. There's a lot of barter going on. There's a lot of cash-only payments going on because people are doing their best to avoid the government. And more of the technology enables us to do that as long as we're able to keep it and use it. So that's part of the reason we're having economic problems in this country, because we're just doing workarounds and we're running in place, and there's no real economic growth that benefits everyone, which means you have all these companies and people that are just running really close to the government, which is redistributing, because we have a redistributionist government in place, and that means people who can will employ whatever means they have, money to buy politicians, lawyers, you know, everything else to get the subsidies they need to keep their companies going and to fence off competition. And that's the condition that we're in. And if it continues for another 4 to 6 years in this country, or 7 years or 10 years in this country, I don't know that it can be reversed. I think at that point, you're looking at something completely different, and that's a completely different podcast. So I'll come back to this again and again in the podcast, but I think people really need to be asking themselves, what do I expect local, state, and federal governments to do? Is what they're doing, is the policy these governments are enacting right now in line with what you think government is supposed to do? And are all these people strutting around the country trying to raise money for their presidential or vice presidential runs really proposing the kinds of things you think that the government should do? And if you don't, if you would answer that question in the negative, no, they're not doing what I think they should do, then what's the path that has to be taken to create the grassroots movements to change the game, literally, to literally upset the apple cart? Because that's what has to happen, you know, a political upheaval. And in order to do that, there's a lot of work that has to be done. Now, maybe you think everything's fine. Maybe you think, you know, that's just too deep for me. I'm just going to wait until they nominate someone and then I'll vote for that guy because I always vote Republican or I always vote Democrat. You know, I'm happy with what I'm getting from the government. I think it's pretty close to what it should be. I just wish they would fix the ISIS thing and maybe grow the economy a little faster, and that's all I care about. Well, okay. you know, then good luck to you. But there's a lot of people out there who are dissatisfied, or as Carly Farina says, disquieted. And I think the real question is, going out and voting for somebody probably isn't going to be the solution. The real solution is going to be creating the upheaval, creating the infrastructure necessary to create the upheaval that actually produces the result which is necessary, which is really a revolution in the way we think about government in this country that's more in line with what kinds of things are going to be happening in the future in terms of technology and industry. And I've talked about that many, many times in podcasts, and I don't want to go on too much about it, but I'm very dissatisfied with the political process for a lot of reasons. I'm very dissatisfied with the voters for a lot of reasons. I'm very dissatisfied with the media for a lot of reasons. I don't think any of it's going to change, and I hope I am proven wrong. Podcast 376, sponsored by xgovernmentcars.com. Don't forget, cash deals direct from owner Ed Johnson. He can find you the car that you want. A 3D Podcast 376, sponsored by xgovernmentcars.com. Let's review very quickly. Cash deals direct from owner Ed Johnson, a three-day satisfaction guarantee, financing for all levels of credit, and you can apply online 24/7 at xgovernmentcars.com. Ed can find you the car that you want, or he may already have it on the lot. Chargers, Impalas, next-gen Fords, plus trucks, vans, and SUVs. It's all good at xgovernmentcars.com. Got to thank the digital sponsor of the BobDavisPodcast.com, Madkay Studios. Madkay creates quality original automotive artwork, and they're going to be out at some of the antique auto shows this summer. I'm going to tell you more as we get closer to those events, and maybe the Mobile Podcast Command Studio will be there too. If you want to know more about Madkay, click on the banner at the top of the BobDavisPodcast.com, and it will take you to their Facebook page, and you can interact with Ken and find out what they do. And thanks, you guys, for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcast digital side. And thanks for listening to you on Stitcher.com, iTunes, or TuneIn. There's two players on the page if you want to listen on blogtalkradio.com or on TuneIn. There's two players there for you. They're just different ways to listen to the podcast. And of course, you can always listen to the podcast right on the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. I welcome your comments. I'd love to post them on the comment page. Just follow the directions to comment on the page. And again, thanks for liking, sharing, and favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter. And thanks for your donations for the Mobile Podcast Command Unit at thebobdavispodcast.com. Thanks for listening to Podcast 376.